Well, twice a day, we have been so beautifully served by this team. This is our last chance to thank them, Luke and Chris and Paul, all of you. Thank you so much. They serve with such a sweet spirit and are here bright and early, and it's just been a joy to minister with them. Okay, here's what a dog says to its owner. You feed me, you provide for me, you protect me, you love me, you must be God. And a cat says, you feed me, you love me, you protect me, you provide for me, I must be God. True? Here's my last shot. Cat, spelled backwards, is Tack, kind of a bad name. Dog, spelled backwards? Just saying. Now, if that feels a little lame, in my defense, I just want to say this. I have no big dog hero videos to show you or anything like that, because Renee, you know, he leads a large staff of people. And one of my girlfriends is one of his key leaders over there at Twin Lakes. And she told me, she's been my spy. She said that this week, he told the entire staff not to do any other ministry. All they had to do was research dog and cat stuff the entire week. I have no staff. I have me and my husband coming up with this lame material. So I just want you to know, it's really not been fair all the way along. Okay, you need a pink sheet for a handout. If you've got that, that would be great. I want to describe to you what Sundays looked like for me growing up in the suburbs of Chicago. I have three siblings, and on Sunday morning we would get up, rush through breakfast, and then put on our very best clothes and our shiny shoes and get in my father's Oldsmobile and go literally three blocks down the street to our church, where we would spend the next few hours. The first hour was always in Sunday school. The second hour we called Big Church, and we would go into Big Church with Mom and Dad. Then when we came home, we always had our big Sunday dinner. So it would be like some kind of roast and mashed potatoes and gravy. What I most remember was the desserts. We were a big dessert family, pie or cake or whatever. And then we'd go off to our rooms and kind of have a quiet reading time that turned into nap time. That was pretty much Sundays, except about one out of four Sundays, instead of going home, we took that Oldsmobile, which, by the way, I'm dating myself now, we had to make sure there was gas in it the night before because you couldn't get gasoline on Sunday, and we would take this car about 30 minutes away to my Aunt Betty's house. This is where my aunt lived with my cousins, and we loved to go over there. I think one of the biggest attractions was that my grandfather lived with them in a small room down in the basement, and I adored my grandfather. My aunt would prepare a similar meal. All of us would sit down and eat. There were a lot more rules, though, at my aunt's house. My cousins were not allowed to watch television at all on Sunday. They couldn't play sports. They couldn't do homework, even. They had to make sure that was done the night before. But my grandfather would pull out his Bible and read to us, and then sometimes he'd pull out his fiddle and start playing his violin. I know this sounds like a Norman Rockwell painting, but that was essentially what it was like at my Aunt Betty's house. And her rules were pretty strict. But whether or not you agree with how she organized her Sundays, I hope you will see what I now see years later. My aunt knew something very, very important. The Sabbath is a sacred day, distinct and very, very special. And today we're going to explore together the origin of the Sabbath. We're going to look at what Jesus taught about this holy day. We're going to see how the Sabbath has been both abused and misunderstood all throughout history. And finally, we're going to discover ways we can say yes to this gift, to the Sabbath principle in our own lives, ushering in rest and delight and great joy. To get us started, we have to go back to the Ten Commandments when our God instituted the holiness of the Sabbath. The Bible, as you may know, has two versions of the Ten Commandments. We're going to look at the one in Exodus 20. The Sabbath commandment is the fourth commandment. It is the longest one in terms of number of words. And also, it's the only one that begins with a positive statement of what we are to do rather than what we're not supposed to do. Let's look at this together. Exodus chapter 20. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. So this commandment calls you and me to model our week, the rhythm of our week, according to God. Because after he created, after he did his work, he rested and he delighted in what he had made. He calls us to mimic him because he knows that you and I do need rest. Now note that this commandment is for everyone. It's all inclusive, regardless of gender or age or social standing. Everyone in the family can't enjoy the Sabbath and exclude mom. And even the animals were called to rest. So don't make your dog go get the newspaper or anything. It's an all-inclusive deal. Now, it turns out that God is very silent about specific Sabbath rules. He laid down only the basic guideline that we are not to work and that we're to set apart this day. But it's curious to me that he's silent about specific rules, because elsewhere in the Old Testament, there are very clear instructions regarding the priestly garments, sexual conduct, dietary concerns, etc. But God is calling you and me to figure out how to live out the Sabbath. And it's clear throughout Scripture that he does take the Sabbath very, very seriously. It is a commandment, not a suggestion. It is a commandment, not a suggestion. Breaking the Sabbath is disobedient, just like it's wrong to steal and covet and murder. Now, we discover that though God doesn't have a lot of explicit instructions, the Jewish leaders, if you read Jewish history, they began to pile on rule after rule after rule about the Sabbath. They brought their human interpretation to what it means not to work. They had 39 categories of activities to be avoided on the Sabbath. And then they provided rigid instructions for every single one of those 39 categories. Prohibited acts included sowing seeds, planting, reaping, threshing, kneading, baking, spinning, weaving, hunting, building, and hammering. Because a person was not supposed to light a fire on the Sabbath, according to the Pharisees, they added that you should not handle matches or kindling of any kind. Well, then Jesus came along, and he really shook things up. First, we know that Luke reports that it was Jesus' custom to show up at the synagogue on the Sabbath. So he grounded his day in worship. That's the first thing he did on the Sabbath. But to his enemies, Jesus looked like a big-time Sabbath breaker. They believed he was a flagrant violator of the holy day because he dared to perform 5 healings on the Sabbath. The religious leaders were outraged, and they began to perform covert sting operations to try to catch Jesus in the act of healing on the Sabbath. Jesus didn't care about the elaborate codes of the religious leaders. He did not rebel against the Sabbath. He reframed it. He reframed it. He basically said that the most important thing, and I find this in Mark chapter 2, I think I gave you this verse, he said the Sabbath was made for people and not people for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. He wanted us to know that the Sabbath was never intended to be a burden. He wants us to see that religion can actually wreck the Sabbath. It's a gift, not a punishment. And it was made for us, and it's all about freedom. Jesus healed people on the Sabbath because it would set them free. He was fulfilling the day's true intent. He was setting them free. Now, throughout the centuries, men and women have swung a huge pendulum back and forth concerning the Sabbath. We've gone from one extreme, which I would call legalism. This is like the Pharisees. That's virtually basically the rules-oriented place, to minimalism, which is sort of ignoring the Sabbath altogether. In AD 321, Constantine, the first Christian emperor, declared Sunday to be a day of rest. He ordered that all the law courts be closed and public works ceased. Now, the English Puritans brought to our country a highly rigid approach to the Sabbath. In certain towns, people were not allowed to smile on the Sabbath. Where did they get that idea? I have no idea. Parents could not kiss their children on the Sabbath. Some towns appointed individuals to show up uninvited at the homes of church members to surprise them and see if any violations were taking place. Many of the Jewish people held tightly to Sabbath practices through the years. There are very moving stories, actually, of how they kept the Sabbath in the midst of horrific conditions and even war. Mark Buchanan writes that they kept the Sabbath under siege, they kept it in famine, they kept it in drought, they kept it in Warsaw's ghettos and Hitler's death camps and Stalin's gulags. They kept Sabbath when the world was falling to pieces. So where is our culture today, particularly when it comes to the Sabbath? My sense is that most of us could not be accused of legalism. I think the majority of people I know take quite a cavalier attitude about the Sabbath. We are, most of us, minimalists. So let's take a look at the typical American's work life. By work, I'm including activities both inside and outside the home. In recent years, we've coined a phrase to describe our culture. We call it 24/7. That's the way most people view their week, as being on and very busy 24/7. Annual work hours in the United States keep escalating, with the majority of people in this economic climate working more than ever. Now, in Norway, where I've had a chance to visit, they work an average of 14 weeks less per year than Americans. That's right, 14 weeks based on a 40-hour work week. We are busy, 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 and we like to brag about how busy we are and how little sleep we get. Many authors have pointed out that the fourth commandment is the only one that Christians brag about breaking. We often tell others, you know, we don't want to say, well, I lied yesterday, or I cheated, or I stole, but we sure like to brag that we're working nonstop 24/7 and we never take a moment to rest. The Swahilis have a word for white man or Westerner. The word is mzungu, and it literally means one who spins around. That's how they see us, turning ourselves dizzy, whirling around without direction. Now, most of us try to cram so many activities and goals into each day. In fact, we start off a new year with a list of resolutions, and deep down we suspect they're going to be impossible to keep, but somehow we keep doing it year after year. Last New Year's at my church in Chicago, my daughter Samantha did a monologue that might resonate with you as it did with me. Take a look at all of these goals and the pressure that they cause us.
Well, come in. Come in. Don't be shy. Welcome. We have been waiting for you. I have been waiting for you. 2017. You look good. Is she gone? She's gone, right? The one who just walked out, 2016. We're done with her. She didn't bring any of the things I asked her to bring, and instead brought some, you know, words, moments, people, news my way that I did not care for. Yeah, the Cubs won, but that's like literally it. She was super mean. That year was mean to me, to my city, my country, the world. And to be fair, she didn't see like the best version of me either. I've been saving that for you. 2017. I'll tell you what, you can expect great things from me. In fact, I thought I'd just sort of lay out the terms of our relationship as I see it, because I get it. I got to do my part if I don't want a repeat of last year, and I don't, to be clear. So here is what I will bring to you, to us. Please hold your questions till the end. While you are here, you can expect me to declutter, throw out that which does not spark joy. Learn to spot things that spark joy. Learn to spark joy. Get up early. Work out 6 days a week. Oh, sorry, work out 5 days a week. Work out some weeks. Start taking vitamins. Run a marathon. Put things back where they belong. Declutter. Be a better daughter, sister, friend. Be a better friend to Matt. Be a better friend to Molly. Be a better friend to Caitlin, Kendra, Ethan, the Kramers, Sylvia and her husband, Tanya and her husband, the neighbors to the left of us, the voters to the right of us, people who don't look like us. Surround myself with people who don't look like me, but don't lose touch with people who do. Don't lose touch. Don't lose keys. Don't lose wallet. Don't lose control at Costco. Declutter. Fall down less Netflix holes, fall down less Facebook holes, fall down less, eat out less, eat less, eat no gluten, sugar, carbs, starch, salt, fat, dairy, meat, eat like a caveman, eat like a Mediterraneanite, eat like not how I ate last year. Look up places to volunteer, make a list of ways to volunteer, find a friend to volunteer with, so much volunteering, and praying. Pray in the mornings, pray in the evenings, pray throughout the day, pray without ceasing, find out if I'm praying right. Walk more, sleep more, paint that wall, call people back, call more senators, no more senators, run for Senate, why not? Why not serve the poor? Why not knock on the door of the neighbors who've lived above me for 2 years? Shoot, I don't know how. I think it's too late to introduce myself now. Less pot, more water, less screens, more sleep, less me, more God, less apologizing, but also obviously apologizing when I need to. Keep a Sabbath, keep a journal, keep a resolution, just one. Ask for a raise, deserve a raise, make a better budget, make a budget. Literally throw everything away. Is everything actually saved in the cloud? Find out and make sure I know how to open cloud. Quit smoking, drinking, talking about people. Quit all my secrets. Try hot yoga. Get out of debt. Get insurance. Get a mentor. Get a boyfriend. Get a baby. Get a pet. Buy a house. Sell my house. Travel to see my parents. Travel to see Africa. Travel to sea. Travel to the gym. Scuba dive. Be better about keeping receipts. Be better about keeping records. Be better about tithing. Be better. For an hour every day. For 10 minutes a day. For 5 minutes a day. Once a day, I will. Every night before bed, shrink my waist and my carbon footprint. Learn to knit, cook, bake, sew, fish, sail, golf, yo-yo, garden, juggle, scrapbook, cycle, carve wood, rock climb, make soap, make candles, do a handstand, speak Chinese, beekeeping, macrame, geocaching, origami, be on time, shop local, eat local, be local. Start less sentences with, I was reading this one article, I can't remember which, but it said that start less sentences in general. Speak truth to power, don't waste 1 hour, fight, speak, serve, stand, stop global warming, preserve sacred land, fix all the schools in my city, find a home for every refugee, silence the violence, feed those in need, give blood, let me bleed, I am ready, I am willing, do you hear? You just wait till you see me this year. I will finally forgive her. I won't be sad anymore. I'll call my mom. I'll get to know Jesus better, deeper. Just you wait. Wait. Where are you going? Wait, no. Last year I did this too. You guys don't wait for me. If it just started going without me, we need a plan. Otherwise, how do I be different? Who will help me be new? I don't know how, but it must happen now. I'm gonna declutter one closet. I'll start there. Don't go anywhere.
So we pay such a terrible price for our busyness, don't we? All these lists, all these goals, all this pressure, it erodes our capacity to enjoy life, to treasure moments, to worship reverently, to reflect on what matters most. Life is meant to be different, so much fuller and slower and deeper. And we know this, but it's exceedingly difficult to grab hold and actually slow down. In our culture, we know very little of setting aside an entire day to play and rest and delight in God. Now, some of you may be thinking, hold on there, we take time off. Here we are at Mount Hermon. It's like a whole week of a Sabbath in some ways. We know what a weekend is. We take the occasional vacation. Well, here's the problem. Leisure is not exactly the same as a Sabbath, and most of our weekends are not very restful. In fact, sometimes they're more draining than the rest of the week. We multitask, we escape into the nothingness of television or video games, we run around shopping or to sports activities. Sure, we may go to church on Sunday morning, but the rest of the day is often filled with routine errands, catching up around the house, digging out of endless emails, cramming on homework for students, not truly a Sabbath. And when we get too busy, we just trudge through life. We lose our sense of adventure. Technology, I believe, has eroded our sense of closure to our days and our weeks because we find ourselves always available, always checking our phones or checking out the television. And this blurs the lines completely between our have-tos and our want-tos, between our work life and our play life. So what's the difference between the Sabbath and just another day of the week? When God tells us to keep it holy, that means set apart, distinct, and to treat it with reverence. We consecrate time, and we make choices to make it different, so very different from the rest of the week. We acknowledge the divine wisdom behind a rhythm, to our weeks. 6 days of work followed by a day of rest, a Sabbath every 7 days. Now, even though God designed us to live this way, most of us live our lives breaking the Sabbath, and we will pay for it eventually. No matter how high capacity you might think you are, eventually it will affect our health, our joy, our relationships, and our souls. It really helps me to remember that God is my maker, right? He's my creator. If you think of an automobile, whoever designed the automobile knows the best way for that car to function, what kind of oil change is needed, and all the other maintenance. It's the same with God. He created us. And just like we need food and water, he says you need a day of rest. And you ignore it to your peril. Just a few more foundational thoughts, and then we're going to get really practical. We are called to sanctify the Sabbath. The root word of sanctify means to betroth. That's the same word we use in our commitment to marriage. The Jewish people refer to the Sabbath as the queen. To them, it is the largest of all days to which all the other days of the week lead. It's the absolute highlight of the week. In fact, the Jewish Sabbath begins at sundown on Friday and ends at sundown on Saturday, and they begin that Friday evening with a Sabbath meal. Every person in the family knows they're ushering in a special day, a different day, a sacred day. So what does it mean for you and me? Well, I believe that God is calling us to this rhythm, 24-hour period every 7 days. Now, for those of us who are having to work on Sundays, it doesn't have to be on Sunday. I coach a lot of church leaders these days, and I'm sad to say that many of them are some of the worst Sabbath breakers I've ever seen. Sunday is their busiest day of the week in many cases, and some of them say, well, I'm supposed to take Friday, or I'm supposed to take Monday, but stuff always comes up, and I'm not really able to do it. But if you're intentional, you can pick certainly a different day of the week. Consecrate a day. In the time that remains, I want to offer just some practical guidelines for Sabbath keeping, but I want to warn you again of the two extremes. Do not go to legalism. That is not what this is about. And do not live in minimalism, which says it doesn't really matter, and be too casual about it. So let's avoid those and dig in. This comes, again, from Pastor Mark Buchanan. He's a pastor in Canada. He wrote a book called The Rest of God. There's a lot of good books on the Sabbath, but I highly recommend his, The Rest of God. And he says there's a golden rule for the Sabbath that simply has two parts. The first part is to cease what is necessary. Cease what is necessary on the Sabbath. Now, growing up in the Chicago area, and you're going to have to go with me now if you've been a lifelong Californian or whatever, but there are no more magical two words for a child to hear than snow day. Even for crusty adults, if we get enough snow, that means no one can get out of their driveways, businesses close, and the only obligation you have is to try to shovel your way out. Everything looks different on that morning. Now, what do you have, like earthquake days here? I don't know. You get no warning on that, so you probably don't have this. But when you have a snow day, you can take your time over breakfast. You can go back to bed if you want. You can stay in your pajamas. You can read a book just for fun. You can bundle up and head to the backyard and make snow angels or a fort. You have no obligations, no pressure, no deadlines, and guess what? God wants to give you and me the equivalent of a snow day every 7 days. That's what the Sabbath is. The Hebrew word for Sabbath literally means to stop. The Sabbath day invites you and me to mimic what God did when he was in the midst of creating, and then he paused and he looked and he said, "It is good, time to rest." The Sabbath is a reprieve from what we ought to do, even though our list is never done. If you're waiting for your list to be done to take a Sabbath, it's never going to happen. You just put the list to the side. We should stop anything that might appear on our usual to-do list, and we move from what we have to do to what we get to do. From what we have to do to what we get to do. We stop creating and drink in the wonder of creation. We cease striving and know that he is God, as Scripture calls us to. Cease striving and know that I am God. Now, many of us are much more comfortable with working than we are with stopping. We are activists, so many of us. We doubt that we could get everything done in 6 days instead of 7. We worry that the world won't function quite right if we sit still. And here's the real truth. We find our core identity in our work. Too many of us find our core identity in what we produce. We secretly see ourselves and our work as indispensable. What value could we see in sitting still? Pridefully, we decide that we are the exception to the Sabbath. That's for other people who aren't as high capacity as I am, who aren't the activist type like I am. Well, here's what I'm learning. There's a kind of humility involved in stopping and resting. At the base of it all, we need to learn how to trust. We trust that God is sovereign and he has all things in control, and then we can risk the Sabbath, knowing it's not going to fall apart. It is in his hands. So here's the question. Will you trust God enough to stop? Will you trust him? Will you say yes to the way of littleness? We have to learn to say no, which, by the way, is a complete sentence. One time, a colleague of Martin Luther's turned to him and said, "Today, you and I shall discuss the governance of the universe." And Luther looked at him and said, "No, today you and I shall go fishing and leave the governance of the universe to God." It's a release. Observing the Sabbath is an indication that I surrender to the Lord of the Sabbath, and I stop my striving and my pushing, and I choose to be still. And guess what I discover? God reminds me that he loves me, not for what I do, but for who I am. We just sang, "You're a good, good Father." It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. That's who I am. I'm just a treasured daughter of the Most High God. Don't define yourself by your title or your role, even being a mom or dad or grandma or grandpa or a worker, a brother or a sister. That's not fundamentally who you are. You are a treasured son or daughter of the Most High God. And when you stop, you remember that. When you stop, it all becomes clear. So if we're to cease what is necessary, here are just some ideas. And some of you already read this on your notes and you're rolling your eyes at me, but just go with me for a moment. Just ideas, no legalism here. But we could cease from our work, including thinking about our work, which is actually much harder. Both things. Physical exhaustion, hurry, multitasking, competitiveness, worry, stop our decision-making, catching up on errands, technology, get rid of the phones for a while, turn them off, talking, shopping. If we choose to avoid shopping, we're actually affirming that we have enough stuff already. We don't need anything else to make us happy. Now, some of you are in a season of life with young children, and you're looking at this list, and you just want to scream at me right now. And I get that. Diapers and tantrums do not take a break on the Sabbath. There are still chores that have to be done, and everybody's got to eat something. I vividly recall the years when my daughters were babies and toddlers, and the thought of just a one-hour nap on a Sabbath would make me cry tears of joy. Some of you are in a season like we were for a while with children and travel sports, and our travel sports were always on Sunday, and each family has to make their own decision on that one. We decided to make the sporting event a part of our Sabbath. We went to church on Saturday night on those weekends, and then we enjoyed the community of families who were on this sports team and often ate together afterwards. We avoided bringing work with us to the games, just tried to enter into the fun of the experience. But in every season of life, how you do Sabbath will look a little different in every season. Some Jewish families put a box by the front door when the Sabbath begins, and family members put into the box things they will not be needing for the next 24 hours. That might include a car key, a watch, cell phones, laptops, and remote controls. You're breaking out in a sweat right now. You can't imagine this. But when they close the lid on the box, it reminds them that the next 24 hours is set apart and will be different. Now, we're going to describe in a moment how life-giving the Sabbath can be with all the space and time we free up. These are just going to be ideas for you to consider, but the main point is to cease again from what is necessary so that we can embrace what is life. The disciples led very busy, active lives with Jesus. They were out and about. They were doing miracles. They were ministering to so many different people. And I love this invitation from Mark chapter 6. And I think it's for you and me just as much as it was for the disciples. It says the apostles gathered around Jesus and they reported to him all they had done and taught. Can't you just see that? They come back to Jesus. Jesus, let us tell you what we did. Let us tell you what happened. Let us tell you about this miracle. We've been busy, busy, busy for you, Jesus. Let us tell you our stories. And then it says, then because so many people were coming and going that they didn't even have a chance to eat, he said to them, I could just see him smiling and saying to them, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. So what are we going to do? What's the second golden rule of the Sabbath? If we're stopping all this stuff that's necessary, what are we going to do? We're going to embrace that which gives life. Embrace that which gives life. In other words, do whatever you want. We're going to dig a little deeper into what that could mean. Dan Allender poses the question this way. What would I do for a 24-hour period of time if the only criteria was to pursue my deepest joy? Do you hear the freedom and the permission in that question? What would I do for a 24-hour period of time? If you've got little kids, say a 2-hour period of time. Start with something. But what would I do if I could pursue my deepest joy? So I'm going to give you 5 key words. These are not on your notes. You can track these 5 key words for the Sabbath. The first key word is delight. Delight. The freedom to engage in life-giving pursuits, to move away from the mundane, to use your imagination, to live fully in the moment. One writer described it as passing through a day without passing it by. When our Creator finished the work and paused and said, "It is good," that was an expression of delight and wonder. The second word is very close to it. It's the word worship. Worship. Our focus on the Sabbath is a Godward one. It is time when we choose to remember and give thanks. And a part of our worship is when we come together. So coming together with other believers may be a part of your Sabbath, but another part could be all by yourself. Maybe you're a journaler. Maybe you're someone who just wants to sit and meditate for a few minutes. Maybe you're more like me, where my pathway to God, the primary way I connect with God, is through creation. I'm like ODing on this place, you know, because I am so sensing his presence in the beauty. I need to move, but Northern California just has been such a gift to me. And when I take a walk on the Sabbath, even in Chicago, I find beauty, and I hunt for it, and it connects me with God. So worship is a big part of it. The third key word is reflect. When you and I slow down enough to make room, we give ourselves the gift of listening to our life, thinking about the last 6 days, remembering high moments when we had connected with God, and honestly remembering some moments when we are not so pleased, when we felt distant from him, when we disobeyed, maybe a time of confession. But reflection is so important, to think about what really matters in this life and not just the next thing on my to-do list. To dig a little deeper into scripture, or to just listen to God, make some room for him to talk to you. Another key word is rest. We've touched on that already. This can mean different things for different people. Sometimes it might just be a really good nap. There's something very holy about that. I love how Psalm 23 says, "He makes me lie down in green pastures." Doesn't that imply that sometimes we have to be told to rest? He makes me lie down. So sometimes you just need to, when you have young children, my husband and I would give each other turns. I was an early afternoon napper, so he would take the girls for a while, and then his turn came around 4 or 5 o'clock. You might have friends you can swap kids with. You have to get creative when they're younger. But somehow in that day, even mom and dad need a time to rest. God knows that we need this. And the last word may be one that we struggle with the most. It's the word play. Play. The Sabbath is intended for play. It's not supposed to be utilitarian. But some adults have forgotten how to play. So instead of genuine play, we easily slide into mind-numbing activities like endless television viewing. We are, too many of us, not even clear what play would look like for us anymore. And so we may need to experiment on this for a while. At the risk of not pushing your play button just right, let me offer some suggestions that might get you jump-started. Play is often best when it's done outside. So let's move on out, engage in a bicycle ride, a great long walk in the woods, or buy some water. For some of you, play will mean gardening. For others of us, that just feels like work. So you have to know, is gardening life-giving to you or not? I have a friend who loves to chop wood on the Sabbath. That's his favorite thing. It just turns his crank for some reason to chop wood. The children of Israel might condemn him for working, but for him, it's life-giving, and I know God smiles when Gary's chopping wood. For some of us, play includes time with family and friends, lingering over a meal with candlelight, feasting and celebrating together. Here's a suggestion for married couples that might transform your Sabbath. Jewish rabbis definitely encourage those who are married to make love on the Sabbath. When my husband heard that, he wanted to convert, so we're now Jewish. My husband also likes sports on the Sabbath. You know, what is it for you that is life-giving? The question is, what would you do for a 24-hour period of time if the only criteria was to pursue your deepest joy? Delight, worship, reflect, rest, and play. Those are ingredients that will help us really embrace the Sabbath. I urge you to experiment. On a scale of 1 to 10, give yourself a grade for how you're doing at this point in your life with practicing the Sabbath. A 10 means you do this every 7 days. You make your day distinct and different. A 1 means, what the heck is she talking about? I work 7 days a week. I don't have a Sabbath. Well, you need to start somewhere. You may not even be able to embrace a full day yet. Start with half a day. Make changes in part of a day. Make some adjustments. I believe the key is intentionality. This won't just happen without some planning. I have learned that my Saturdays, currently, when I worked at a church, Sunday was not my Sabbath. But now I only teach occasionally at my church, so most Sundays are more of a Sabbath for me now than they ever were before. And it's changed my Saturdays, to be honest. When I'm intentional, I try to get the grocery shopping done and either make a meal ahead for Sunday or count that we're going to go out on Sunday. But I think about that. I get my errands done on Saturday, try to do the laundry or whatever else needs to be done. And when I do that well and actually check my emails one more time before I go to bed to try to carve out at least part of Sunday when I'm not looking at all of that. And then when I do that, my first thought when I wake up on Sunday morning is, wow. A whole day ahead that's going to be life-giving. Granted, I don't have young children at home. I'm an empty nester. So the Sabbaths are much easier for us to orchestrate. These days, we usually meet our girls at church down in the city. And here's what we've learned about adult children. If you're paying, they are so there for brunch or any other meal. In fact, they have scouted out the most expensive restaurants in Chicago. Say, we have another one to try. Yeah, I bet you do. Dad's paying, so we spend a little brunch time with them. Then we come home, and here's another little tip for you, because I'm all about being helpful. If you want to take a good nap, what we do is we come home, and my husband says, I found something on the Golf Channel for you. I watch golf, because the announcers are British, and they're whispering. And when they're telling what people are doing at each hole, you fall asleep, like just like that. So just a little tip in case you're looking for a good way to have a nap. I try not to cook too much on Sunday, and we really just relax. And when I lay my head on the pillow after that kind of a Sabbath, I say, I'm so grateful I said yes to this Sabbath. And I realize what I've been missing, what my Aunt Betty knew. There's something different and holy and sacred and distinct about the Sabbath. It's one of the most outrageous gifts God wants to give us every 7 days. His commandments are rooted in love. And he simply says, the Sabbath was made for you. Will you receive my gift? Will you trust me enough to carve out one day a week that is sacred and set apart and filled with delight? Look at this promise, and I close with this from Isaiah chapter 58. If you keep your feet from breaking the Sabbath and from doing as you please on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the Lord's holy day honorable, and if you honor it by not going your own way and doing as you please or speaking idle words, then, here's the promise, you will find your joy in the Lord, and I will cause you to ride on the heights of the land. And when I read that and I see not going your own way, I'm thinking that's about work. That's about just making it like every other day. And if I refuse to do that and embrace that which gives life, God's going to fill me with joy and I'm going to soar on the heights of the land. So this is the kind of message, I promise you, that you can walk away from and just say, good idea, I'll think about that later. Or you can embrace the assignment that I've given you to talk to your spouse if you're married or your good friend. Talk to someone and say, what practical steps would we need to take to honor the Sabbath, to make it more of a practice in our lives, and to agree together what a plan would be. I'm going to invite Paul and Luke. They're coming up, and I want to offer all of us a gift in this moment. This week, we've talked about saying yes. I don't know how God has spoken to you, but I've talked to you about saying yes back to God, first and foremost, saying yes to becoming a friend of sinners, to being a light in this world, saying yes to forgiveness, to thinking through who you need to let go and release, and then this morning, saying yes to Sabbath. My guess is if you're like me and you've heard some wonderful teaching at night, there's been a lot coming at you in seminars and all week long. So I'm going to ask you to try to simplify it as you sit here and listen for a moment. What is God primarily speaking to you this week? What is the one takeaway? Could have been from a morning, from a seminar, from an evening session. Could have been from a walk that you took in the woods and you had some time alone with God. And what is he asking you to say yes to? Luke has written a song that is just perfect for this moment. He's just going to sing it over you. So I'm going to invite you to listen to the Holy Spirit right now. Say, God, what do you want me to walk away from Mount Hermon with this year? What's my one takeaway? What's my next step? And then I challenge you to say yes.
Through the doubt and the fear of this life, I believe. Through the fight and the war for my heart, there is peace. Because I know that your grace is a well that won't run dry. I will take up my cross and lay down my life. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. In the loss, in the tears, in the hurt, you are more. Every hope, every dream, every prayer, make them yours. Because I know that your grace is a well that won't run dry. I will take up my cross and lay down my life. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I will stand when you want me to stand. I say yes. Yes, I will go where you want me to go. I will love how you want me to love. I will stand when you want me to stand. I say yes. I say yes. I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. And I will go. I will love how you want me to love. I will stand when you want me to stand. I say yes. Yes, I will go where you want me to go. I will love how you want me to love. I will stand when you want me to stand. I say yes. I say yes. I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I say yes, I say yes to all you want for me, to all you are. I say yes. See.